Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Small Biz Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lori Liker. We're broadcasting today from Little Woodrow's on 6th Street in Austin, Texas. I am a business coach. I deal with business operations and human resource management. And our guest today is Coy McDermott. Coy is also a business coach in the Austin area, but he's got some great things going on right now that I think you can't miss this conversation. If you are thinking about going into business for yourself, if you're a first-generation person trying to get your business started, this is going to be the show for you. Welcome to the show, Coy.
Thank you so much for having me, Lori.
Tell me a little bit about what your coaching practice is all about.
Sure. When it comes to coaching for me, building businesses is something that I've always enjoyed. It is so much fun, but building people is really where my passion lies. So personal development is something that is near and dear to my heart. And as a speaker, I love to help podcasters, professionals, and entrepreneurs to be able to get their message out to more individuals, get more exposure for their companies, and build their brand through speaking.
So you do a lot of coaching with public speaking then?
I do a ton of coaching around public speaking, and I also help individuals to start businesses too.
Which, you know, they go hand in hand because for a lot of public speakers, they really are, for a lot of small businesses, one of the best ways to get your business out there and noticed is to be a public speaker, go and talk to different organizations about what it is that you do and generate interest that way.
I could not have said it better, Lori.
With that being said, one of the biggest fears in recent studies is about public speaking. How do you help people be more confident in public speaking?
Glossophobia, I believe is the term for it. And to help individuals to become more comfortable speaking, the first is to know and understand that the fear never goes away. And courage, or doing something courageously, isn't doing it with the absence of fear. It's feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And when it comes to really helping individuals to not be as anxious, I love sharing a story with you, Lori. When I was younger, I had a debilitating stutter. And the more and more that you hang out with me, the more and more that you'll realize that sometimes that stutter still flares up. And I remember in the seventh grade, my teacher nominated me to give the I Have a Dream speech for the entire seventh grade class. And
oh my goodness.
I immediately thought it was a joke, Lori. Like, I was like, there's no way that you could have nominated this scrawny, short, and by short, I mean like very short, Lori. I mean, here I am now as an adult at 5'7", right? And just imagine me now in the seventh grade. I'm this scrawny, short kid with a debilitating stutter who was just nominated to speak in front of his entire class.
Wow.
Was absolutely mortified. I was mortified. I thought that this was a cool joke. I was saying to myself, how could you even put someone in a situation like that, knowing good and well that they had a debilitating stutter? I remember running home and just crying to my mom. Like, I was like, Mom, we have to get out of this school, right? Like, I'm not just going to be the laughing stock of my grade. Yeah, exactly, right? I'm not just going to be the laughing stock of my grade. I'm going to be the laughing stock of the entire school, right? I've got to get out of here, and I've got to get out of here now. And the first thing that I started thinking about when it came to really just honing that in was my mom. She looked at me and she said, Son, it's not always about how you say things, but it's more important what you say. Focus on what you want to say. And it was in that moment that I took on the role of speaker. I read that I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King Jr. so many times, Lori, that I thought I wrote the damn thing, right? I'm practicing and I'm going and I'm going and I'm going. And sure enough, the day comes and I get on stage. But this isn't a hero story, Lori. I got on stage and I froze. I absolutely froze. My knees locked up. My fists were clenched. My palms are sweating. And I don't know if it was divine intervention or just luck, but my mom was sitting in the third row, and she and I locked eyes, and I saw her mouth the word, "I'm proud of you." I took a deep breath. I closed my eyes.
And
just like you heard that dead space right there, Lori, was exactly what happened.
Yep.
Nothing came out, right? I was in trouble. I'm up on stage. Nothing is coming out of my mouth, and I had no clue what I was going to do next. It actually took my teacher, who nominated me to go up and speak, to like begin to like nudge me towards the podium. But I stuttered and I stammered and I struggled my way through it, but I got through it, Lori. And it was from that moment that I knew and I understood that there was nothing that could stand in my way if I truly desired to do it. And that's how I not only got over my fear of speaking in public, but I got over myself.
That's awesome. That is just awesome. Did you find the more you did it, just like practicing a lot, did you find that the more you then spoke after that in public, the more relaxed you were, or did you still have that fear each and every time you went up?
Oh, there's always butterflies, Lori. But the more and more that you rehearse, the more and more that you practice, the easier and easier it is to deliver, right? It kind of reminds me of when I was teaching my daughter how to write her name. She's 6 now, but I remember when I was teaching her how to write her name, how much of a struggle it was for her. But now, she can write her name without any problems, right? She can spell her name without any issues, and it has everything to do with repetition. And it's the same way when it comes to speaking. The more and more that you rehearse, the more and more that you practice, the easier and easier it flows. So the nervousness generally comes from a fear of the unknown. But if you can make as many things known about the situation before you jump into it as possible, the easier it is for you to be able to handle that pressure and that anxiety and that fear.
Right. And I know that for me, unlike you with the stutter, my problem was crippling shyness. I know you don't believe now, but I had crippling shyness. As a matter of fact, the first time I went to a networking event, I spent an hour in the bathroom throwing up.
Wow.
And what finally got me out of it was I started working on radio and started to have to do public appearances. And the man I produced, the talk show host I produced, said, "Here's what you do. Pretend to be somebody else when you're in public. Be confident. Pick somebody who is very confident in public and be that person. And then, you know, keep you back here. And then you go out as this other person. You're just acting. So act confident. Act brave. Just do it." And ever since then, the more I do it, the stronger that particular personality gets, and the easier it becomes, so that now I don't even think about it. I just get up and talk.
That's an
but
amazing
I also
tip.
Deal I also help people who are giving talks, particularly those that are doing presentations before civic groups, to make sure that they're not doing death by PowerPoint and things like that, so that they're actually giving a nice, well-rounded talk, one that people will understand on every level. Do you find that a lot of times people don't understand the mechanics of giving the talk in public?
So the tip that you gave was absolutely amazing, and I want to tap on that real quick, and then I will definitely answer your question with regard to the mechanics of giving a presentation in public. With regard to the tip that you gave of essentially creating a character, another great thing that I like to inform individuals of is, how can you speak about things that are authentic to you, right, and that are true to
right.
you? And it's never really difficult to begin to speak about items that you truly love and you truly enjoy. We tend to limit that because we think that no one else cares about that or that no one else wants to hear about that. But grand scheme of things, if you can continue to stay authentic to you and who you are, individuals see that and they're attracted to authenticity. And when it comes to speaking in public and the mechanics behind it, a lot of individuals do not understand the mechanics behind being a speaker, let alone do they understand the mechanics behind running a speaking business, which are two totally different things. One is a functional skill, and another is a business acumen. And it's being able to marry the two is where you're going to find the most success.
Right. And understanding that what you might hate in a presentation is not necessarily something that your audience would hate. If you're trying to hit the people who are auditory learners, visual learners, and kinesthetic learners, as long as you're hitting all those points, you're going to draw the most people in, and they'll leave understanding and retaining and comprehending what it is that you've said.
Definitely. One of the biggest mistakes that I see with new speakers, and even speakers who have been doing it for a long time, is over-delivering. Have you ever been to a presentation, Lori, where the speaker just went up and over-delivered and you came out completely overwhelmed with information?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to keep it very simple when you're doing public speaking and keep all the extra content for the handout.
You have to be careful when it comes to over-delivering. I mean, you know, as a servant leader as well, Lori, I know that you can get wrapped up in just giving and giving and giving, right? And so can I. But the thing is, when it's all said and done, am I truly giving to you if you are unable to receive any more? Just because I'm pouring more water into a filled glass, does that mean that I am actually giving that individual more water? The answer is no. It's spilling over. It's falling out. It's not the individual is unable to accept all of the additional things that you're doing. And that's what we have to make sure that we stay cognizant of as speakers.
Right. Well, you know, you and I could go on with this for several more hours, and I'd like to have you back on just to talk about public speaking. But the main reason I wanted you on the show today was to talk about your incubator/accelerator that you've got going. And I just think this is such an awesome program. Tell us about what you got going on.
Sure. So the incubator, the name of the company is the Level Up Institute. And the Level Up Institute is all about creating more equity. And we focus in on first-generation college students, and we help those first-generation college students to create micro-ventures that will become businesses. So we really wanted to focus in on first-generation college students, especially from low-income families, to begin to help change and shift the dynamics of economies and of historically financially challenged areas. And the Level Up Institute is all about teaching entrepreneurial ideas, but more than that, it's about creating businesses.
What do you find is the biggest struggle with this particular demographic, the first-generation college students? What do you find is the biggest challenge in changing perceptions their perception of being in business for themselves?
Exposure is a huge one. Exposure to the thought and the idea that it is possible for me to be a business owner. It is possible for me to get paid doing what I love. It reminds me of a mantra that I call the millennial dilemma, because I do focus in on millennials as well, obviously, right? I'm working with first-generation college students. And that millennial dilemma is go to school, get a good education, come out and get a good job. That is the mantra that we've all been told. And through the Level Up Institute, individuals have an opportunity to understand that they can go to school, they can get a good education, but they can come out and they can create a good job. They can create the opportunities that they want. They can create the lifestyle that they want. It moves them from competing to creating.
Do you feel that, because the American dream traditionally has been you can make of yourself whatever you'd like, do you think that that has become institutionalized, or that those coming out of college have been institutionalized for so long that the idea that they need to get a job at another company is drowning out the entrepreneurial spirit?
I believe that being an entrepreneur is a personality type. It's something that is in your personality. There are individuals who are completely okay with being employees, and there's nothing wrong with that. It is an amazing ecosystem, right? And employee and entrepreneur go hand in hand. It is very similar to the hunter and gather relationship of before, right? You had the hunters or the entrepreneurs, and you had the gatherers or the employees. So that is a very symbiotic relationship. But because of the industrial age, where we needed to continue to now bring individuals into factories and get more workers and more employees, we've over-rotated to the point of where entrepreneurship is no longer focused on. But if you remember before the industrial age, almost everybody was an entrepreneur. So much so that their last names actually used to depict what they did. If their last name was Baker, they probably were bakers. If their last name was Farmer, they probably were farmers, Smith, a blacksmith, and so on and so forth. But because of the Industrial Revolution, we've now over-rotated on creating employees. And what I'm finding and what we're continuously seeing, especially in the millennial generation, in my generation, are individuals who are now going against that shift or that over-rotation to say, no, this isn't what I want to do. I feel as though I was created for more, and I want to find that and do that.
And it seems that certain demographics are being encouraged to find that more. Do you find that first-generation college students are not as encouraged to find that more as maybe third- or fourth-generation college students?
So first-generation college students are first-generation college students do not truly understand all of the opportunities and the possibilities that are out there. And because of that, exposure, again, is key. A lot of the first-generation college students that we are currently working with are also from low-income families, so that in itself is another whammy with regard to exposure to opportunity. It takes money a lot of times to be exposed to opportunity. Especially coming now into a first-generation college student, these individuals, let me tell a story and actually kind of just speak from a personal view, because I am a first-generation college student. I think about whenever I applied to college, how important the SATs were, but I didn't know that. I had no clue how important the SATs were, and because of that, I did not really focus in on the SAT. I graduated high school with a 3.8 GPA, but I went to a large high school that had AP courses, and because of that, we had inflated GPAs, where now I'm competing against individuals with 4.8 and 4.9. Now, me not knowing anything about college, I am immediately at a disadvantage because I didn't even know about these additional college credits that were there and that were going on that I could have taken more advantage of. Nor did I know about the SAT courses, nor did I have the means to be able to pay for SAT course prep, nor did I have the finances to pay to take the SAT again. So now I'm in this very weird situation where I say that I want to go to college, I say that I want a higher education, but simply because of an SAT and me not truly knowing or understanding all of the weight that is put on that SAT, I'm now labeled a at-risk student, a student that can only come into college with a provisional acceptance.
Right, one that's not fully accepted because you are at risk of dropping out.
Exactly. Which had absolutely nothing to do with my prior history, but more based upon SAT scores.
And economics.
And economics. Because had I been more economically well off, I would have taken SAT prep courses. Or if I had not taken SAT prep courses, I would have taken the SAT, not done as well as I wanted to on it, and then had the economic means to now go take the SAT prep courses and take the SAT again.
Right. So with these first-generation college students that you're working with, you said you help them create micro-ventures.
Yes.
Give us an example of that.
Sure. So this is the first year that we've started. The program started about 5 weeks ago, and we have a cohort of six right now. We're partnering with a company in Austin by the name of Breakthrough, breakthroughaustin.org, if you'd like to check out their website. They work with first-generation college students, and they actually get these first-generation college students from the age of 12. So they start working with them in middle school. And their goal or their mission is really to get first-generation college students to and through college.
Mm-hmm.
And with regard to the micro-ventures, this program is an incubator. So our first phase, our create phase, is all about ideation to MVP, or that minimal viable product. And then from there, we move into our second phase, which is demonstrate, which is all about now the nuts and bolts of running a business: sales, marketing, legal entity creation, A/B testing, websites, those particular things. And then we move to the end of that, which is an MVB, or a minimal viable business, which gets these students to make their first dollar. Right, there's no greater feeling than making your first dollar in business, Lori, and I'm sure that you can attest to as well.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, once you make that first dollar, that first transaction, there's no way to explain that feeling. There's just this high that you receive that you say to yourself, oh my gosh, I can get paid and do what I love? Whoa. And
that gives you more impetus. Yeah, just gives you more impetus to continue going. So how long is the program?
Sure. So the first two phases are approximately 12 weeks. The first phase, again, is six, and that's create. And our second phase, demonstrate, is another 6 weeks.
Okay. And once they finish the create and demonstrate, once they're demonstrating their product and they're making that first dollar, what's next for them?
Next for them, we have phases three and phases four. And phase three is iterate, and phase four is escalate. So iterate, right, just in a business, you know that as soon as you now start your business and you put something out there, it's not going to be perfect from the very beginning. That's just not how it works. But you can continue to iterate and continue to iterate until you now find something that is absolutely perfect for your market. And then after you iterate, now we escalate. Now we scale the business. Now we continue to add an additional component. Now we continue to automate things, right? And that is now the culmination of scaling this business from your idea to a fully functioning business where you're now bringing on staff, you're now hiring teams, you're now looking for space with regard to buildings and actual physical locations as well.
Mm-hmm. What kind of investor response are you getting on this program? Do you have investors interested in helping?
We have some investors interested already. And we just inked a deal with the Austin Community Foundation, which is a local nonprofit here, so that we can take charitable donations as well and, of course, apply for grants. So we've got our eyes on a few grants that are out there for entrepreneurial accelerators. And we're also working with community leaders as well. People Fund is one that we have our eyes on. And as our company is a for-profit company, we're also looking to create licensing opportunities for colleges and universities as well.
That's excellent. I mean, because that's all only going to enhance the participation in the program. How many students? You said you had 6 right now in your cohort?
That is correct. We have 6 right now in the cohort. Again, starting off, we wanted to make sure that we of course could go through and prove success, because we know that success breeds success.
Right. Exactly. What kind of other resources are you using to help these students?
So we have a mentoring network that is ridiculous. So when it comes to really helping these students, it is a business partner and myself. We are doing the facilitation, but we have mentors. Right now, our current mentor network is, I think, up to 27 people. So we have a support
awesome.
System around these students of entrepreneurs who span from retail locations all the way to virtual online businesses, online marketers as well. So, I mean, we have the full gamut of a support team and a support system around these students to, again, expose them to the possibilities of entrepreneurship and to help them to create these micro ventures that will then grow into small businesses, that will then grow into medium and large businesses, and hopefully one day enterprises as well.
That's just fantastic. I'm so excited about this program. We've been talking with Coy McDermott. Coy, if somebody wants to find out more about the program, where can they find information?
Sure. They can find out more about the program at levelupint.com. So that is levelupint.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We'll have to schedule you again, and we'll talk about some public speaking, because that's that also. And see it on the program. Thank you so much, Coy.
Oh, my pleasure, Lori.
You've been listening to Small Biz Talk Radio with Lori Leiker and our guest, Coy McDermott. Again, if you want more information, take a listen to the rest of the show, and you can find more information, or go to Coy McDermott's website. His name is KoyMcDermott, Coy McDermott. And we appreciate you being with us with this episode. Please tune in next time. Our guest will be Emily Leach with the Texas Freelance Association. We look forward to hearing from you. Please email me at smallbizcoachtx@gmail.com, and we'll answer any questions that you have. I'm Lori Leiker. Thank you again. Have a great week.